Hi, this is Susie Larson, and thank you so much for listening to Live the Promise today. Our website is filled with even more powerful and encouraging interviews. Learn more by logging on to myfaithradio.com. Good afternoon. Thanks so much for tuning in today. I'm Susie Larson, and this is Live the Promise, and we are here to help you engage in a strong and active walk of faith. Happy Tuesday. Hope your week is off to a great start. Well, I am so looking forward to today's show. We're having a guest on that I just love to have time and time again. She makes me smile. But here's my question for you. Have you ever noticed that once you hear something over and over, it actually starts to sound true, even if it might not be true? How about these statements? God helps those who help themselves. That's not in the Bible. 50% of all marriages end in divorce. That's not true. Did you know that? Love means never having to say you're sorry. That sounds good. Sounds good in a movie, on a poster. Definitely not true. And so it's really important that we understand some of these things that sound true and feel true, why they're not true, because they impact how we approach marriage, how we approach life. And so I'm excited today to talk to Shanti Feldhahn. She's got a brand new book out titled The Good News About Marriage, Debunking Discouraging Myths About Marriage and Divorce. I don't want to waste another moment. So let me tell you about her and we'll get her on the show. Shanti Feldhahn is a social researcher and best-selling author. Her books have sold 2 million copies in 22 languages, including For Women Only and The Male Factor, The Unwritten Rules, Misperceptions and Secret Beliefs of Men in the Workplace. Her work has been covered by leading media, including The New York Times, NBC Today, and Focus on the Family. She and her husband have 2 children and live in Atlanta. And you can find her author page on our website at myfaithradio.com. Shanti, welcome back to the program.
It is always good to be with you.
Well, I appreciate the niche that God has given you in the kingdom, because you're this analytical person, a researcher, and then you marry it together with faith, with really outcomes that are tangible, and you bring us truth that's so accessible to us that, I mean, I really, really love the niche that God has given you. I just want to say that.
Oh, thanks. I appreciate that.
Well, we always start out talking scripture, as you know. You've been on the show a few times before. Wondering if there is a passage that's either just been jumping off the page at you these days, or you had a life verse you'd like to share.
You know, really, one of my life verses is Philippians 4:8, which is, and it's really appropriate to what we're going to be talking about today, because it's all about thinking on what is lovely rather than thinking on what's not so good. You know, to think about whatever is true and honorable and just and worthy of praise is so critical. It really changes. When you said earlier, you know, things that impact how we approach life, that is going to impact how you approach life.
Love that passage. Okay, so you've got a number of books out, and this one, The Good News About Marriage, Debunking Discouraging Myths About Marriage and Divorce. Talk about what prompted this book for you.
You know, I stumbled over it's been about 8 years ago. I was a nationally syndicated columnist. I don't know if you knew that years back. And I was writing a column about divorce, and I wanted to quote the divorce statistic correctly. And I thought, you know, maybe it's not 50%, maybe it's 48.7 or something. And so I asked my researcher, my research assistant, you know, could you just go find me the number? And she came back like, okay, this is confusing. I'm seeing all these numbers that don't match that. Like, there's some much better data out there. And so I'm like, oh my goodness. And so I started looking, and we started seeing numbers that didn't match the conventional wisdom at all, not just about the divorce rate, but about other things that discourage us about marriage. And so I started digging into this, and it became a bit of a compulsion, honestly. I felt like the Holy Spirit kept driving me on to dig out this stuff that we don't know, that really is so much more positive and can give so much more hope to people rather than what we think today, which is that marriage is in trouble. Because it turns out a lot of the reason we think that, it's based on conventional wisdom that just isn't true.
Yeah, and I love Andy Stanley. It's so appreciated the foreword he wrote for you. And he made such a good point when he said that if we believe the negative stats we hear over and over again, we'll subconsciously revert to crisis mode. And I would love for you to just expand on the ripple effect of that decision, because when we slip into crisis mode based on wrong information, to me, it changes the whole trajectory of the relationship. So explain the ripple effect of a wrong belief system.
It does. does. It's the strangest thing, and I can really see it all around me as I research people, because, you know, that's primarily what I do. You know, I'm talking to men and women, teenagers sometimes, you know, all day long, listening to what they think underneath the surface. And what we think about marriage being in trouble and, oh, my goodness, things are just bad, you know, and you've got a better chance of winning at roulette, right, than of your marriage succeeding. I mean, that's what people tend to think. And it leads to this sense of futility about marriage. And I've seen underneath the surface as I've talked to people, there really is this one common denominator under whether a marriage survives or not. And really, it's whether the couple has a sense of hope versus that sense of futility. Because if they think, you know what, yeah, it's tough now, but we're going to make it. Obviously, the outcome is completely different than once they start to think, you know what, this is never going to get better. Yeah. We're not going to make it. Because you can say all you want. As you know, as somebody on the radio, as a friend, maybe a pastor comes in and talks to them and says, you just, you know what, stick it out, work harder, you know, just work at it. And once they start to think, you know what, if the ship is going to sink anyway, why bother working so hard to bail it out?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it just doesn't make any sense. It's better to spend that energy trying to escape the wreck intact, you know, in their mind. And so the problem is that futility, that sense of discouragement, we're not going to make it, you know, half of all other people don't make it either, that itself can lead to a marriage ending. And unfortunately, because we've been believing all this pantheon of bad stuff for years, we have this culture-wide feeling of futility about marriage. We have to change the paradigm.
We so do. You know, in some ways, it's like, Shanti, that we've become hypochondriacs. You know, when you think about think about it, though. Just go with it for me, would you? So if you think
it
as a hypochondriac, I might be sick. I'm going to get sick. It's only a matter of time before I get sick and really sick. Well, if we have that kind of fear, defeatist attitude in our marriage, and then our marriage displays some kind of symptom of illness, we'll make a rash decision to just get the pain to end.
Yeah.
And let's get this thing over with. And you can sure see how the enemy would just love to perpetuate kind of a hypochondria in marriage. Well, what if we're on this side of the stat and not on this side? And you're going to have troubles. You're going to have times where you don't feel the love. And right there, you're going to make decisions you shouldn't. Don't you think?
Oh, my. Well, no. I mean, I know. I've seen it everywhere. You probably have, too. I mean, it's really interesting. I, you know, in the book, one of the things that we did as we were researching this, and when I say we, by the way, I actually recruited my research assistant, who's now my senior researcher, to do this with me for the last 8 years, because we, you know, it was really complicated and I needed her help. But one of the things that we found is that there are these five areas that are really myths rather than truth, and actually the truth is much better. And, you know, one of them was this divorce rate. And I was talking to a friend of mine who was going through this kind of difficult situation in her marriage. And they'd had some ups and downs. And they were in a patch at the moment that wasn't so great. And I was just telling her kind of offhand, this was a few years ago when I didn't realize what a big deal it would be. I was telling her offhand, you know, what I was finding. You know, the divorce rate's nowhere close. And she, I saw this light come back into her eyes. And she was like, what do you mean? And she started like peppering me with questions. And it was weird. It was like this statistic that was out there in the ether had been so internalized. And I said, tell me what's going on with you as I'm telling you this, because I can see this change come over your face. And she said, you know what this is? She said, this reminds me of when I was pregnant with my first child. I was really kind of scared of childbirth, because everybody had told me, all these women kept telling me, it's the worst pain ever, you know. And she said, I was really kind of scared. And then I thought to myself, wait a minute, you know, literally billions of women have done this throughout history. If they can do this, I can too. And she said, that's what I'm feeling now. Like, if most people make it, if most marriages make it, I can too. I can get through this.
And what a difference.
You
are transformed by changing the way you think. And so if there's a negative expectation, especially based on wrong information, you're already cutting yourself off at the knees. So this fact one is the prevalence of divorce has never been 50%. In fact, you write 72% of those who've ever been married are still married to their first spouse. That's really staggering and totally different than what we've come to believe.
Isn't that awesome? And by the way, not only are 72% of people still married to their first spouse, but the 28% that aren't still married, a big piece of that is people that were married for 50 years and their spouse died. That's just marriages that have ended. That's not just divorce. And part of the problem is that nobody really knows what the first marriage divorce rate actually is. I think that's one of the reasons that kind of the bad data and the myths can get traction, because the numbers are really complicated. It's really impossible to know any one right answer. But we can get a lot closer. We know it's got to be less than 28% on, and this is overall, right, on average. So we can say there's about a 10% rate of widowhood. So maybe the divorce rate is 20 to 25%.
Hmm.
Now, that's still too high, right? That's nothing to, like, woohoo, you know, dance a jig about. But it's a whole lot better than 50. It's important to mention that there are some high-risk groups that are more challenged. Like if you get married as a teenager, the divorce numbers are a lot higher. But overall, for society as a whole, we have never come close to that average of 50%.
Wow. Okay. And so fact two is the divorce rate actually has been declining for years. Say more about that one.
Yeah, this one is actually fascinating to me just as a researcher. See, what happened is that in 1970s, the divorce trend really started, because that's when no-fault divorce came in. And that's when people could get divorces because they wanted to, rather than having to prove to a judge that they should grant it. And so the divorce rate skyrocketed for a few years. And then in 1980, it kind of hit a peak. Like, people started to wake up and go, okay, this isn't all it's cracked up to be. It's causing all these problems. And so since 1980, the divorce rate has been declining dramatically, and it's dropped more than 30% since 1980.
Wow.
And that's something that people don't know. And so, you know, researchers continue to project that some point down in the future that the divorce rate will hit 40 to 50%, but we've never gotten close. The divorce rate has fallen. Just as a basic analyst, I'm not buying it.
Wow.
I just don't think we're going to get there.
And one of the factors is that is cohabitating. Would you say that as far as declining divorce rates, that some are just not getting married? Does that play in?
I'm sure it plays in a little bit, but you know what? Do you mind if we move on to myth number two?
No, let's do it.
About why people cohabit in the first place. Because I think even though cohabiting is on the rise, and that is absolutely correct, that's actually one of the things we confirmed was true. Some of the myths, some of the things we debunked, some we confirmed, right? That's true. But why do people cohabit? I think it's because to some degree they're cynical about marriage. You know, they think, I mean, I've talked to many people who are living together, and almost universally I've heard, listen, you got half of marriages breaking up. You got most marriages not being particularly happy. Why would I want some of that?
Yeah.
And so the second thing that I found out of these sort of five myths that everybody tends to believe, the second one is this idea that people aren't particularly happy in their marriages. You know, I mean, you know, you've known me for a few years, Susie, and you know I'm kind of a freak for random research. You know, kind of going around and asking
people
questions.
In a cute sort of way.
Yeah, yeah. And so I'll go into like a coffee shop, and you know, if I have an extra couple of minutes, you know, while I'm waiting for somebody to come in or whatever, I might walk around to a couple tables and just say, you know, hi, I'm a social researcher. Do you mind if I ask you a quick question? And I usually have a book to prove that I'm really not a freak. And one of the questions I've been asking lately is to the person in the coffee shop, what percentage of marriages do you think are happy? And I'm not asking them if they have a happy marriage, right? I'm asking kind of out there, what's your perception? What percentage of marriages do you think are happy? If I ask 10 people that question, 8 of them tell me, I'd say about 30% of marriages are happy. And they're flabbergasted when I tell them that there's literally been dozens of studies on this and that the actual average is 80%.
Wow.
That 80% of marriages are happy. Now, that doesn't mean perfect, But that's not roommates either, right? Those are people who are generally enjoying being married. And that is one of the reasons people live together. That's one of the reasons people avoid marriage and unfortunately do some of these things that it turns out are actually higher risk than getting married and making that commitment. Because the most happy group in the country in general are people who are in strong and committed marriages. The least happy group are people who are cohabiting and thinking that they're protecting themselves. And instead, unfortunately, that group is more likely to get divorced later if they get married.
And they're so,
they went in without a commitment.
Right. And there are, you know, stats that actually prove the downside of cohabitating.
Yeah.
I mean, really, even apart from faith, I know we talked with Glenn Stanton about that. I was jaw-dropped to hear about just the impact of, and that's an effort to self-preserve. But you think about it, I was so interested at how jaw-dropped your different leaders and pastors. You travel around and speak at these conferences. As you start to kind of unveil your findings, they're all saying, we've been saying the 50%. We've been feeling defeated before we get started. And so talk about even the impact, not just on this knowledge landing on marriages, but on leaders, because this partly is on us as far as people moving in together, because we need to get our facts straight.
Yeah, well, listen, first thing I need to say right up front, if there's any pastor or leader, counselor, anybody, small group leader who's listening to this and hitting their forehead and going, oh my gosh, I've been sharing all the wrong data for years, don't feel bad. I have too, right? And I'm a researcher. I'm trained in this area. It took me 8 years to figure this out. I've been investigating this field for 8 years now. It is so darn complicated. And that's one thing, that's the reason I end up putting the book out, is because it's like, okay, we need a comprehensive look at this. And so that's the first thing I want to say is don't feel bad, because I've said all the wrong stats from the stage myself. But the second thing is for people to recognize that I think our leaders, our pastors need encouragement almost more than anybody else.
Yeah.
I mean, literally, I go speak at about 50 churches a year. I know you speak at a lot of churches too, Susie. I run into you at some of my speaking engagements. And I don't know if you've seen the same thing I have, but behind the scenes, you know, sitting down with a pastor in the green room ahead of time, you know, before we go on stage at a conference or a church service or something, a pastor will often, I can see there's discouragement. There's this deep sense of weariness. There's this feeling like, you know, when I'm standing up on stage as a pastor and I think to myself, if the rate of divorce is the same here as it is out there, that means as a pastor, all my work doesn't mean very much.
And I'm fighting a losing battle.
Yes, exactly. Great way of putting it. And frankly, amongst the people in the congregation, when they hear that, you know, the rate of divorce is the same in the church, which, you know what, we have to talk about as well, because it turns out that's not true either. When people hear that, they think, okay, if on something as important as marriage, doing what the Bible says doesn't make any difference, what does that say about the Bible?
Wow. You're
like
right.
There's this little seed of doubt. So that's the third myth we have to debunk. It's the idea that the rate of divorce is the same in the church, because it turns out that's not true either.
Did we get that, Shanti? Because it was part of the Barna research around, I thought I remembered it being more about our addictions and our activities and just the choices we make. And that didn't really measure the depth of our commitment to Christ. So it was really a broad brushstroke look at some of our tendencies, wasn't it?
No, here's what it really was. It was a look at our belief systems, because everybody thinks that Barna found that the rate of divorce is the same in the church. And he didn't find that. He actually never studied people in the church, as a matter of fact. The entire scope of that study, and he's done it about every 5 years or so for the last 15 or 20 years. And those surveys, those studies were specifically and only, you know, calling people on the phone and asking the "Are you a Christian?" questions, which Barna is very good at. That's one of their sort of skill sets, is digging into what people believe. But what he found is that someone who says that they were a Christian, which is, I would imagine, the, you know, majority of the population in the country, had the same divorce rate as someone who said, "No, I'm not a Christian. I'm an atheist, or I'm Jewish, or I'm a Muslim." Those groups had the same divorce rate. but he specifically excluded whether they went to church from the analysis. That wasn't what he was trying to study. And so what I did is I partnered with Barna, and I bought that same data set, and we reran all the numbers with just this one factor added in. Was that person on the phone that they're surveying, was that person in church last week? And if the person was in church last week, their divorce rate dropped by 27%.
It's staggering.
And by the way, there have been probably, I show in the book, there's about 4 or 5 other major studies that I list out that found that if you just by going to church, now that doesn't even cover all the other stuff that tends to come along with that, but just by going to church, the divorce rate drops anywhere from 25% to 50%. For a pastor to know that he can stand on stage and say with confidence, it matters if you get yourself in this community. Yeah. It matters if you come to church. That is huge for pastors to know. I am praying that every person listening to this will go buy the book and learn the stuff for themselves, but then hand that book to their pastor and encourage them that what they're doing really matters.
Such a good word. So we talked about the fact that the prevalence of divorce has never been 50%, that the divorce rate has been declining for years. And this one you just started to touch on, certain patterns and actions can dramatically change the chance of staying married. So church going is one. We've got just a few minutes before we hit our break. Can you give us a couple more?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, let's talk just for a minute, going back into the divorce rate question that we were just talking about. One of the things that people need to know is that there are some things that make a difference to your chances of getting divorced. I want to tell everybody out here who's been married for more than 5 years, 5 years or more, your chances of getting divorced just dropped dramatically. Because
wow.
The greatest spike in divorce actually isn't that 7-year itch. It's year 4. And so that's another thing that really encourages people. Go figure. You know, if you're struggling but you've been married for 5 years, you're going to be fine. I mean, yeah, there's some people that have issues past that time and there's always concerns, but don't feel like you've somehow got this thing hanging over your head that's going to come get you. No. You know, that's really where the greatest need to be careful is in those first few years.
Give us another one. Do you have another one?
Well, one of the things, obviously, that probably we should say explicitly is there are some actions, when you're, again, talking about just the divorce rate, there are some actions that are kind of high risk. Let's talk about that cohabiting thing again. One of those elements, unfortunately, that sometimes people do in order to prevent a problem is they'll say, okay, you know what, let's try this out. You know, let's live together. Let's, you know, kind of test drive the car kind of deal. And I actually, as I've looked at the studies that have found of what happens if you end up getting married to that person later, have found that, unfortunately, the chances of getting divorced go up. And it's because you've gone into that relationship without a firm commitment. So instead of, like, test driving the car, it's almost like the act of living together first, it sort of has a risk of breaking the car. Most people don't know that.
When you think about those beginning months and even years of marriage, you're forming kind of a muscle memory in the way that you relate to each other. If you're doing it on wrong information, living together, trying it out with the back door open, you're developing habits and self-preservation tactics that aren't sustainable in a healthy marriage. So it's still not a true picture of what real marriage will be.
Well, and unfortunately, not only are you developing sort of a muscle memory, but you've also, and one of the great researchers on this is a man named Scott Stanley at the University of Denver, who's done a lot of research on the impact of cohabitation. And what he has a blog actually called, that has a great explanation of this. It's called Sliding Versus Deciding. Because what he's found is that most of those people, they live together and then they say, yeah, let's go ahead and get married. You know, so the people who end up getting married instead of breaking up, it's kind of this sliding into it instead of saying firm commitment, we're going to do this. And unfortunately, it leads to a lack of security. And one of the things, you know, you and I have talked about some of the research I've done on how women feel, like for my books, From Women Only and Men Only, mm-hmm. right? And one of the things that's very common, unfortunately, in the minds of women already is this does he really love me question.
Okay, I'm stopping right there because we have to take a hard break. We've got a handful of copies to give away. If you've got a question, I'm throwing the phone line out there. Number right now, 877-933-2484, 877-933-2484. We'll be right back.
Here we stand, here we are, with all our wounds and battle scars, from all the storms and all the wars we've weathered. Together, we had no way of knowing when we started way back there and then. How the road would twist and turn and bend. We just knew we belonged together. And if it wasn't for God's mercy and His grace, there's no way we would be standing in this place. But because He has been faithful every step along the way, here we are together.
I absolutely love that song. That's Stephen Curtis Chapman on Glorious Unfolding, and I feel like it tells our story, you know, mountains and valleys and places you never thought you would go, high and low, but here we are still standing together. It's possible, isn't it, Shanti?
It is, and I really want people to hear that it's not only possible, it actually happens for the majority of couples. That changes the dynamic dramatically when you think about getting married.
Well, I'm talking to Shanti Feldhahn today. As I mentioned, we've got four copies of a brand new book, The Good News About Marriage, Debunking Discouraging Myths About Marriage and Divorce. Shanti said, you know, she would love it if you get your hands on this and just reignite your own hope about your own marriage. But once you've read it, hand it to your pastor, to a leader, because we just want to change the culture and the mindset that we actually can make it. And like she said, it's a probability, and that many, many people are married and actually love their spouse and are happy in marriage. And so we welcome your questions now, 877-933-2484, 877-933-2484, or you can email me right now, Susie@myfaithradio.com. We've got an anonymous caller calling in from Duluth with a question for you, Shanti. Welcome. You're on the air.
Hello, Shanti. Thank you for this conversation. It's really good. In counseling young people that I mentor, and I'm, you know, been married for many years, and I have this feeling that it would be better for these young adults that are looking toward possibly getting married someday to do that counseling piece before they even get engaged.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because once the engagement hits, then it's, oh, everybody's excited, and it's kind of on the books.
The momentum.
For Wednesday. The momentum's there, and so as they're trying to pick apart and figure out if they're even meant to be engaged, how to go about that, finding a counselor, finding someone that would maybe not even be in your church because of privacy issues. I don't know. Give me some counsel on how to counsel those young people in my life.
Oh, yeah. Let me tell you, that you're really thinking the right direction, because it's called pre-engagement counseling. And that is actually incredibly high leverage because of exactly what you said. It's a whole lot easier to try to decide, you know, is this something that will work before you actually make that commitment? Because afterwards, then you're breaking off something that's much more significant, and it makes the bar to break it off a little bit higher. And so we actually have some friends who do pre-engagement counseling for about, oh, man, I want to say 20 couples a year, some pretty high number like that. And there are actually systems. You can actually just Google pre-engagement counseling, and there's all sorts of amazing tools that help people think through, like, okay, how are we going to handle things like conflict And is this something that we can adjust, or are there some really big issues there we need to address before we go down that road?
Excellent. 877-933-2484. Maybe you've got a question for Shanti about marriage. We've got Sarjay calling in from St. Paul. Welcome. You're on the air.
Hi. I was just wondering about kids in the marriage. So if two people are married, when they have kids, do kids strengthen a marriage, don't have much of an impact, or what's up with that? Do you have any statistics on that?
Actually, it's kind of interesting. The first few years where divorce is higher, you know, is usually when there aren't, you know, children around yet. And so it's interesting. A lot of people think that kids, oh, man, they add to stress and tension. And, yeah, of course, you know, having a couple of kids running around, or 5 or 10 or however many kids you have, of course, that adds a whole nother dynamic into the marriage. But it turns out that the highest divorce rates come even before kids enter the picture, usually. And I think this is an example, honestly, of another area that the enemy has woven a bit of a lie around us in the culture, because, you know, those of us who have children know that, yeah, there can be heartaches and headaches, but man, what a blessing that is. You know, when God told us to be fruitful and multiply and to really pour into the next generation, it wasn't just like, okay, you're going to have to stick it out and do it. It becomes that you get much more than you give back.
So good. Take a few more calls here. 877-933-2484. We've got a handful of Shanti's resources, 4 copies of her book. I think we're just about ready to go through those, but we've got other books of hers as well. 877-933-2484. Got Marilyn calling in from Fergus Falls with a question for you. Marilyn, welcome. You're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call. I teach psychology, and I teach classes where a lot of these statistics are presented. And I'm just wondering, how have researchers looked at the numbers that have caused them to make this kind of consistent error and come up with 50%? And how would I refute that, in, or how could I present that in class to help them understand?
Hold up Shanti's book for one thing.
Well, let me tell you, this is one of the reasons why we wrote the book, is for exactly that purpose. It's basically a really small little book, and it's very simple in order to put the most important stuff out there to help anybody, not just for somebody who teaches psychology, because I'm sure some of the listeners listening to this are like, okay, that's out of my league. Mm-hmm. But for anybody to be able to understand and take the essential points, and not just in a psychology class, but, you know, your girlfriend at work, you know, you've got a friend at work who says, well, why shouldn't I live with my boyfriend? You know, half of all marriages end in divorce. What's the problem? And for you to be able to say, well, actually, you know what, that's a myth. And 72% of people are still married to their first spouse. And, you know, to be able to have a couple of these things and to be the ones who are leading the way in changing how we think about it is, I think, a big enough deal that that's why we wrote it, very simply. Now, as to why some of those bad numbers have been out there, I think the main problem is that people see a news story, and they see that researcher so-and-so, you know, who's a big-name researcher, probably one of the ones that we've talked to in the research process ourselves, they say researcher so-and-so, you know, projects that 45% of marriages will end in divorce. And they miss the word projects, is that it turns out that when you hear a researcher say, you know, the odds of a marriage making it the odds of marriage not making it are 40 to 50%, those are always projections into the future. Like, we're going to hit that at some point. And I look at it as an analyst. I'm like, we've never gotten close. Again, overall, on average, we've never gotten close. The divorce rate is falling. At some point, I think you got to be willing to revise your projections. Mm.
So good. Marilyn, thank you. And you get a copy of Shanti's book. And so you can hold it up in class and say, research says. Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Well, here's another great quote from your book. You wrote, many of us who work with marriages have focused more on saying that marriage is about serving the other person, that we need a plan to endure times of tribulation, work hard, and not to expect a primrose path. And all of that is true. But when that's all we share about marriage, we and everyone else begin to assume that most marriages just aren't happy. It is so easy to discourage people about marriage without even intending to. So how else can we remedy this picture of marriage? When you think about just that so many marriages, like you say, aren't perfect, but they love being married and they love each other and they're a solid foundation and they actually contribute to their community by having a strong family.
Yeah, and here's the problem. Right now, you look at somebody, let me just give an example of what a young person who's, let's just say you're a millennial, you're in your early 20s, you're right out of college, and you walk down the street today with the bad conventional wisdom that we have about marriage, and you're maybe a little bit cynical because you've heard all of this stuff that turns out isn't true, and you see a couple holding hands, and you think, well, aren't they special? you think, well, they're
who
the
do
exception.
They think they are? Yeah.
You think mm-hmm. they're the exception. As opposed to, once you know this, you walk down the street and you see a couple holding hands, and then you see another one holding hands, and then you see a couple with their arms around each other, and suddenly you start to see the happy marriages everywhere, and you start to think, how cool. How cool that when you commit for life, most marriages are happy. And then you learn that even the ones that aren't happy, this is something I'm not sure we shared yet, one of the other studies that's out there that I think everybody needs to know is that if you're not happy in your marriage, a major study found that if you stick it out for just 5 years, 80% of those marriages are very happy 5 years later. And to be for a young person to say, to think to themselves, you know, even if you aren't happy, most marriages get back to happiness. How cool that what God designed still works.
Yeah.
And it changes everything about how you view life, how you view marriage, what you see around you. Same thing in the church. For the average young person, or really any of us, to sit in a church and look around and to say, and this is another thing that was cool when we did the reanalysis of some of these other studies that have been done to talk about church attendance and that kind of thing, is that not just are the majority of couples in the church happy, but 53% of people who say that God is at the center of their marriage, so more than half of the people who say God is at the center of their marriage, they're not just happy. Both the husband and the wife independently shows that they were at the highest level of happiness in their marriage. They're very happy. And to look around the average church and say, how cool that most of these marriages are going to last for a lifetime. And actually, most of the people in here are really happy in their marriage. And, you know, if I'm not, I can get there.
Yeah. Oh, that's so good. Well, I know from my own valley in marriage that we would have lost far more than we would have gained had we quit when it was hard. But on the flip side of that, Shanti, is I had absolutely no idea the treasure that was waiting on the other side of the valley. When I think of what we persevered through and what we hold now, I mean, it's quantified. I can't even put a price on it. I can't get my arms around it. And so it's no wonder that the enemy would want us to just cut ourselves off at the past, because there's a treasure on the other side, a much stronger marriage, a much stronger foundation, a deeper walk of faith. And so I would just love for you to just talk about that 80% or so that come through a hard time. Every time I've ever asked a couple who've walked through a hard time, who've come out the other side, how are you now compared to how you were had you not gone through that valley? They can't even express how more tightly knitted they are together. So just talk about the ripple effect of that and why the enemy would want us to quit when it's hard.
Yeah, this is one of those areas. There is no way to adequately sit down and tell somebody just how special things will be if you stick it out. And the reality is, you know, there are some marriages that just have a hard time for years. There are some of the exceptions, but that's the key. They're the exceptions. And the rule is that most cases, you walk through that, you work through that. It's kind of like that analogy of, you know, the coal that, you know, you press deeper and deeper in the heat and the pressure, and it turns into a diamond. It's just, it becomes something beautiful that you never could have expected. But the thing that people need to know is that diamond is there. They need to know that they can get out the other side. I, you know, it's interesting. And did I mention the reality show that I saw that sort of really pulled this out as an example?
No, you didn't do it. I thought if she's going to tell me she was a nationally syndicated columnist and on a reality show, I was about to fall over.
No, reality show.
Okay, that's coming next for you. I'm just saying.
No, that's hysterical. because here's really what people need, right? They need hope that they can make it, that there'll be something great on the other side. Right now, they don't know that they can make it. They don't know that something's great on the other side, and they don't know how long they're going to have to wait. It's kind of open-ended. It just, all they can see is hurt and pain. And I was, it's interesting, I know this is going to sound crazy, but Jeff and I last year were watching this reality show on TV that really involved people being in really difficult situations in like the wilds of Alaska. And they were dropped into this awful situation with a whole bunch of other people where they didn't have food, didn't have shelter, had to catch all their food. And they didn't know, here's the key, they didn't know how long they were going to be in this situation. They didn't have any kind of map to civilization, like, okay, it'll take us 2 weeks and we'll be there. And so they're incredibly hungry, they're cold, they're miserable, they have no idea if it's going to be 3 more days of misery or if it's going to be 3 more months of misery. Like, they have no clue. And the producers, rudely, meanly, gave them this handset with this big tempting button that they could push to be rescued if they just couldn't take it anymore. And so because the pain is open-ended, they push the button. And it's the same thing in marriage, is that if you don't see an end and it just, you feel trapped and you don't know how to get out of it, and you don't realize that, you know, most people make it through this valley. They make it through that pressure and that heat, and they find diamond on the other end. They find this beautiful thing that they could never have imagined on the other end. It's really easy to just, let's just press the eject button. Half of other people couldn't make it either. It doesn't make it feel so bad. And it really does make a big difference if you can sit somebody down and say, okay, here's one of the other things. Because here's one of the other things we found in the research about these myths that cause people to be discouraged and give up. One of the other big myths isn't numerical. It's not, oh, 50% of marriages have ended in divorce. It's internal. It's this feeling that, you know, marriage requires rocket science and it's really complicated. And, you know, if we're having problems, oh my goodness, it's going to be 3 years of psychotherapy. And that, it just discourages people. Like, you know, I'm not a psychologist. How do I know how to get out of this? And the reality that we have found, that's such good news, is that most of the time, even some of the big marriage problems can really be addressed by small changes and small adjustments. You know, you and I have talked in our radio programs before about some of my other books. It's one of the reasons that those have hit a nerve. You know, a husband, he's working 80 hours a week to try to tell his wife that he loves her and has no idea that she's feeling abandoned. And suddenly he realizes, oh my gosh, I just need to spend more time with her. Like, she doesn't want the money, she wants me. And he makes this little adjustment, you know, takes a few less deals, and suddenly everything changed, and it wasn't rocket science.
It's amazing. Start to listen to each other. And that book, I'm going to give the title wrong, but it's The Secrets to Highly Successful Marriages. Is that what it's? Give me that title.
You're sweet. It's The Surprising Secret of Highly Happy Marriages.
Excellent.
But you're good
book.
You've got a good memory.
I endorsed it. I should know the title, but I just pulled it out of the air. But that book, to me, is like this one. It's hardcover, small, and so many tangibles that you can do on your own, little tweaks and adjustments you can make that can make all the difference in the world. And we'd only have about, I don't know, 8 minutes left, but I want to make sure we cover these important truths that you uncovered in the book. One is, more than 99% of spouses actually deeply care about each other.
Yeah.
Again, when you start to hear these foreboding stats and everybody's just hanging on and it's a losing battle, and you start to believe that, you're going to live and act out of that belief. But look, okay, let's step back and say this is true. 99% of couples actually really care about each other. That just makes my heart do a pitter-patter, you know? I mean, it's so sweet.
and that's the, see, really, right there, this is the problem. This is, you know, the book you just mentioned about the highly happy marriages. This is an example of one of the big, to me, high leverage things. It's like, most marriage problems aren't because of these big ticket issues. Most of the time you do have a couple that really cares. The husband really cares about the wife. The wife really appreciates her husband, and they're trying really hard, but they don't know that they're trying hard in the wrong areas, or they're hurting each other and they don't intend to. You know, you've got a wife who says, I love you, I love you, I love you, and has no idea that when she says, why didn't you pick up the dry cleaning? What are you thinking? You know, that it's making her husband feel inadequate, and that's his most painful feeling. And so she's trying real hard, but she's really not hitting it.
Yeah.
And that's an example. She cares about him. Now, he may not feel like she cares about him, and that's the problem. But she does care about him and just doesn't know. A couple of little adjustments. You know what? You change the way you speak to him, it can dramatically change the tone of your marriage. And same thing on his side. There's a few little things that he can do that dramatically change the tone in the marriage. And suddenly it seems attainable. And that is really one of the reasons, unfortunately, why some of these marriage problems come up. And that's one of the reasons. Remember how we mentioned that if you are miserable in your marriage and you stay married 5 years, almost 80% of those marriages are very happy 5 years later. It makes perfect sense that if small changes make big changes, that you could be happy 5 years yep. later, because it's not rocket science.
And I would guess that those you talk to that have come through the valley and feel stronger than ever, I bet none of them would say, well, we do exactly what we did before we got into the valley. You know, all of them would, I would guess, say, well, we had to make some adjustments. I know we did. We had to put everything on the table and say, anything goes except our marriage. What are our big rock items? And we've not let up from those things. And, you know, Jesus says things are proven right by their fruit. The fruit that has come out of some of the boundaries we've put around our marriage that help us prioritize God and each other have been so life-giving. And it's so, yes, those were radical for us. And wouldn't you think that that is the case for those who've come through a dark valley on the other side? They found some new practices and new tools?
Oh, absolutely. And in fact, actually, there's some numbers that are, again, very different from what people think that kind of prove that. Because you know how everybody, this is one of the other myths we cover in the book, you know how everybody thinks that second marriages have this, like, super mongo horrible divorce rate? Mm-hmm. That's the technical term, super mongo horrible divorce rate. You know, I'll tell you, I've got several friends that are on a second marriage, and they all kind of walk around with this feeling like, when's the other shoe going to drop? Because they've seen that 60% of second marriages end in divorce. And so there's this like, well, it turns out, actually, that's a myth, too. And we've looked for years. There is no study that says that. Those look like it's just pure urban legend kind of numbers. And it turns out that the divorce rate for second marriages is a teeny bit higher, but just a little bit higher.
Wow.
And that it turns out that, and actually past the first few years, you know, again, the first few years of a remarriage are also risky, just like the first few years of a first marriage. Once you get past that first few years, the divorce rate looks like it's lower for second marriages than it is for first marriages because of that exact thing you just mentioned, that somebody has learned, I had a marriage that failed once. I'm learning my lesson. I'm not doing that again.
Wow.
And it's the same thing if you stick with a first marriage and you get through the fire and out the other side. You've learned something precious, and putting it into practice makes all the difference.
So interesting. You know, I've talked to women who said exactly that on their second marriage and saying, knowing what I know now, I know my first marriage could have worked. And though I'm very committed now to the second marriage, I will admit that there's a lack of confidence and some fear because I can't fail at two marriages. So some of my decisions are driven by fear, and I didn't need to have it go that way. And I just think that's so important. I mean, there's so many implications to hanging in there if you can, you know. And God knew what he was saying when he really, divorce is just so painful on so many levels. But just learning certain things can make all the difference in the world, and we've got to be willing to do that. Well, another one of your truths that you explore is that 82% of couples, one partner is simply unaware that the other is unhappy. So when there is an inequity, it's that in 82% of the time, one is actually unaware that the other is unhappy. That's amazing.
Yeah, well, there we are, back to that issue of it's not always the big-ticket issues that cause problem. It's not always, you know, people think of it as being, oh, it's this big thing that's causing a problem, or, you know, most marriage problems they think come from addiction or alcoholism, or, you know, somebody was sexually abused as a child and, you know, that's impacting their life. And yeah, those happen, but those are the exception. You know, those are the minority situations. Most of the time, it's not those big issues. And we found, again, in the research, that number you just mentioned, that when we looked at people that described their marriages as happy versus not happy, we compared the husbands and wives to each other. We wanted to know, like, you know, a husband could say, yeah, we're happy. But if the wife is like, eh, you know, then you're like, okay, that wouldn't be truly a happy marriage. And I looked at the numbers, and of the people who are in this group of sort of a so-so marriage, 82% of them are there because one person thought that they're happy. That's a really high degree of cluelessness, and it's a lot easier to solve cluelessness than it is alcoholism.
Wow.
And so that's an example of just giving them some tools, helping someone be purposeful, waking up your kind of your mind to something, opening blind eyes. And thank goodness that's where Jesus is really good at opening blind eyes. And this whole thing, I think, is an area where, hate to say it, I think the enemy has pulled the wool over our eyes in all of this stuff to make us think that marriage is in trouble.
So you think about couples who maybe are hit and miss with attending church. Let's just say you tweak that thing. You get to church because you know that not only does Scripture say assemble, get together, but it actually strengthens your marriage. And let's say leaders start to understand when I perpetuate hope around marriage and I challenge my, you know, congregation to prioritize marriage and faith, I mean, really the impact on our communities would be staggering. And so I would just love, as you we wrap up here, if you would pray that there would be a revival in hope in marriage, because I don't think we could even understand what could happen if that could happen, you know?
Oh, yes, I'll definitely pray. Lord, this is one of those areas where, Lord, you know that for years I have felt a compulsion to research this and bring this good news truth to light. And it really is the good news. Just like the gospel of Jesus Christ brings us into completely new life and new hope from the old to the new. Lord, you know what you want to do with this. And I pray that you would wipe away, blow away all the discouraging myths that have been built up around marriage, that the evil one has perpetuated. Lord, bring new life and new hope for marriages all across this land. Change the paradigm of how we think and talk about marriage. Let every person listening to this have new hope themselves for their marriage and the ability to go share it with others, knowing that this institution you created, it still works. Thank you, Lord.
Amen. Shanti, thank you for joining us today.
It's a pleasure.
I always love having you.
Here we stand, here we are, with all our wounds and battle scars, from all the storms and all the wars we've weathered. Together, we had no way of knowing when we started way back there and then. How the road would twist and turn and bend. We just knew we belonged together. And if it wasn't for God's mercy and His grace, there's no way we would be standing in this place. But because He has been faithful step along the way.
Thanks so much for tuning in. Have hope. Your marriage can thrive. You can be happy in marriage. It's possible. Thanks for tuning in.